Okay, today's bite of Torah is part of our weekly Parsha review, which is sponsored throughout the year by Jake and Karen Abelevitz in memory of Jake's parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah bas Avraham. And today, in particular, it is sponsored by Steve Levitan in memory of Rabbi Wallman's sister-in-law, Bela Tzipora bas Reuven, Bela Wallman. Aleha Shalom, and the learning that we do today should be, in fact, a zechus and aliyah for their neshamas. Okay, so I would like to bite off a little bit more than I can chew today with the well-known question, which is posed by none other than the Ramban himself. So this is not a modern, this is not a new question posed by the Ramban and many rabbis since, and that is the very curious behavior of Yosef HaTzadik, right? So Yosef HaTzadik, the man of extraordinary integrity. We talked about his character the last couple of weeks, but we're left with a terrible quandary about Yosef. And that is Yosef's behavior once the brothers show up, right? Yosef was very generous and acted in a very noble manner when he was dealing with Potiphar and the wife of Potiphar. He was, quite upright in his dealings with Paro, with the butler and the baker in prison. So he seems to have a generous spirit about him. A man of integrity, a man of uprightness, and yet when his brothers show up, it all apparently seems to go out the window. And if we can open up our, it's too many psukim to read, but if we could just open up our chumashim to chapter 42, page 232, chapter 42, Perek Mem Beis. And if you have a Chumash today that has the Haftorah in it, that would be useful because we are going to be looking at the Haftorah as well. If you happen to have a Tanakh with you, that would also be useful, although not critical. We're going to take a look at some of the story that is the preamble to the Haftorah. So if you don't have any of it, you'll still be okay. But at the very least, the Chumash and really the Haftarah. If you can have the Haftarah in front of you, I think that would be very helpful. Okay, so I just want to read a few psukim. As I said, it's too much to read. I mean, the Parsha itself is a rather lengthy Parsha. Miketz has 146 psukim. Even within the story of Yosef and his brothers is so lengthy. It would take us 20 minutes just to read it. So I don't want to spend all that time. But let's read a few of the psukim just to refresh our memories and maybe look at a few salient points. Perek Mem Beis, Vayar Yaakov ki yeshever b'Mitzrayim. Yaakov sees that there is there's food in Egypt. There's a famine in Israel. There's food in Egypt. Vayomer Yaakov levanav lama tisro. And Yaakov says to his sons, lama tisra'u. One way of understanding this, why don't you disguise yourselves? Vayomer, hinei shamati ki yeshever b'mitzrayim, redu shama v'shivu lanu misham, v'niya lo namus. Go down to Egypt, get the food, come back. We'll live, we won't die. Vayerdu achei Yosef asara, 10 brothers go down, meaning one stays up, that's Binyamin. Lishbor bar b'mitzrayim, and he goes down to they go down to get food. There's Binyamin achi Yosef lo shalach Yaakov v'sechav. Binyamin he didn't send. Ki amar penikreno ason, because he was extraordinarily protective over his baby boy. Right? Doesn't make a difference how old he might have been. The baby of the family remains the baby of the family until 120 years, and everybody else is 121 and 122. And the brothers came down to Egypt. It was a major metropolis, lots of people coming and going, especially during this period of famine, where the main resource was in Egypt. So there was a lot of people going and coming. The Yosef was shalit al aretz. Yosef was the ruler. He gave out all the food, and the brothers show up. They bow down. Vayar Yosef es echav, and Yosef recognizes his brothers. He sees them. Vayakirem, he recognizes them. Vayisnaker alehem. However, he remained disguised to them. Vayidaber itam kashos, and he spoke with them in harsh terms. And he immediately begins his inquisition. Me'ayim basem, where are you coming from? And they say from Canaan to get food. By pasuk 9, by Yizkor Yosef, Yosef remembers the dreams that he dreamt, and he says to them, "You're spies. You've come to spy out the land." He accuses them, and they say, "No, they deny it. Vavadecha ba'olish barochel. We just came for food. Kulanu b'nei ishechad nachnu." And then they go on to say, tell a little bit about themselves. We're not here as a band of soldiers. We're brothers. Our father lives in Canaan. And Yosef persists. He says, "No, you're a bunch of spies." Vayomer, and they say, "Shnei masar avadecha hachim anachnu b'nei ishechad be'eretz Canaan." 12 children, one father. One son has been lost, and one son remains with our father. And Yosef continues, "I'm telling you, you're a bunch of spies." And they say, "Listen, you can test us out." And he says, "Send one of you and let him fetch your brother, and the rest of you will remain in prison. And it'll test to see whether you're telling the truth or not." And then he brought them into a prison, kept them for a few days. He switches around the deal and he says, "You know what? I'll tell you what. You go back, and I'll keep one of you until you return." Vayomer Yishal Achiv. Then they turn to one another and they say, "We are guilty for what we did to Yosef all those years earlier. He pleaded to us. We didn't listen to him. And therefore, this terrible situation is befalling us." Okay. I think that's sort of enough for us to read right now, to basically ask the following question. And as I said, so it's not a new question. And that is, why didn't Yosef ever go to seek out his father? Why didn't he go and send messengers even to see what was doing with his family? And now that they're back here, and they show up, why is he treating them in really the most cruel, in a rather cruel way? Again, we're operating with the premise that Yosef is this paragon of virtue. Right, he withstood the temptations of Ashes Potiphar. He conducts himself with honor and integrity to his former boss, Potiphar. He is good with Paro. He's good with the butler and the baker. I mean, this is a man of this is a serious person. So the two questions which arise are, if he was so concerned about his father, why, as the story progresses, why didn't he ever go? I mean, he was a man of means. He was somebody who could certainly have sent a search party to go check out and see what the story was. And now that the brothers have showed up to him, all of a sudden he remembers the dreams, and he treats them in really a cruel way. Why did he do that? Why exactly did he do that? Now, there are a few answers which I want to share with you, some of which are, we've discussed in the past. And what I want to do today in terms of the framework of what we're going to do is look at some of these answers and then particularly see how Chazal seem to come down on on this question. And we're going to do that by looking at the Haftarah that Chazal chose for us for this Parsha. So that's what we're going to do. The question is posed: why didn't the brothers seek out Yaakov? Why did he treat his brothers so harshly? and offer a few answers. And where did Chazal come down on this question? By analyzing the Haftarah that they have chosen for us, for this parsha. So that's the general framework. So just if I can, before we look at anything, if I can just throw out the question to the group here, you know, can you suggest a reason why it is that, you know, either A, Yaakov never bothered to go, Yosef never bothered to go see his father. Number two, why did he treat his brothers in such a seemingly cruel fashion?
The father thought he was dead. So
the father thought the son was dead. But why doesn't the son go to the father and disabuse him of that illusion and tell him, I'm alive, father? Why didn't the son go to the father? Not why didn't the father go to the son. That I got. Why didn't the son, who was a man of means and power and influence, travel the few hours or few days that it would take to go up to Canaan and seek out his dad? Yes, Yitz.
Because then there wouldn't have been his first dream where his brothers bowed down to him, been fulfilled. I mean, he might have gone out to seek out his father. The brothers may not have been home, you know. But this way, it's almost a guarantee that the fulfillment of his original dream, that his brothers and father would be bound down to him.
Okay, so Yitz says that the purpose of this was to orchestrate a fulfillment of the dream. And that's why I assume you would argue why the pasuk says he remembers the dream, and then he launches into this tirade against them. Now, this whole thing has to do with realizing the dream that he saw. Is that accurate? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So before we take go ahead.
Payback time for all the abuse he suffered from his brothers.
Okay.
Before that.
It's payback, right? This is payback time. This is indeed revenge. Okay? So one possibility is it's revenge. The other possibility is that he was a spiritual person trying to realize the dreams, the prophecy of the dreams. So I want to look at each one of these and just think about them for a second. Judy, you want to say something? You're on mute.
First of all, revenge doesn't explain why he didn't see his father. That's a separate, you know, that.
Right. So revenge will explain why he was not particularly good to his brothers. It's not going to explain why he didn't go to see his father. Yitz's approach, which is that he was trying to realize the dreams, could have explained that. In other words, he needed them to come to him, in order to make sure that they were all going to bow down to him. If he goes and shows up there, maybe the likelihood isn't as great. All right. So, okay. Yeah, go ahead, Judy.
The other thing is a side issue, but I think there's a difference between righteousness and kindness. He may have been kind of, I'll do the right thing here and I'll do the right thing there, and I know I had this dream and I have to fulfill it. But that doesn't necessarily mean he
was kind and compassionate.
He was kind or had great interpersonal skills.
Okay.
Or social judgment.
Okay. No. All right, so Judy suggests maybe, not an answer, but just a question.
I think that the premise that it's about,
right,
you know, if he said, Tzadik, why didn't he do it? That a person can be righteous and not necessarily kind.
Right. So I want to, just before we go on, I want to just take that point up immediately. And that is, I think that, I would suggest that the premise is, I want to defend the premise. Because we do see, or at least from your attack, because we do see Yosef conducting himself in a way which is kind, and that is that when he's in prison, he sees the butler and the baker are looking really sad, And he approaches them and he says, like, what's bothering you? You know, so and when they tell him what the issue is, you know, he does attempt to help them. So that's not a question of justice. That's really, I think, a question of kindness. So that, I think, is somewhat explicit. This is just an inference. I would say the fact that he was, that he succeeded in all of these areas, when he was in prison, when he in the house of Potiphar, and then again when he was in prison. Now maybe he succeeded because he was a cutthroat guy, but I think that to succeed and to rise from being the slave in the house all the way up, you can't really be. I think you can't really be a bad guy. I think you have to have some good interpersonal skills. You're not gonna rise up that rank. Maybe if you start off as you come in on a certain level, so then okay, then you're the tough guy. But to go from slave to head of household, I think that demands more than just a good, business sense. That's what I think. But that's just my inference. Yeah.
If Joseph would go and seek his father, he will have to explain how come he's alive and what the brothers did to him.
Okay, good. Right. So Paulo makes an excellent point, which is one approach which is offered, which is that he didn't go because had he gone, it would have really undone the lies of his brothers. It would have exposed them.
Right.
But Paulo, by the same token, he just pushed it off. At the end of the day, he does force his father down. So the lie is exposed. Or if the lie isn't exposed and somehow it's explained away, it could also have been explained away earlier on.
Yeah, except for that if he explained it away earlier on, he would have hurt his father more by knowing what his brothers did. If he did it after the prophecy took place, then his father sees this is the way it had to be.
Okay. That's a good point. That's assuming that the prophecies actually come true. So Yit said, and this is what the Ramban argues. Let me just read a couple of lines here for the Ramban, so we can. I'm going to share my screen with you. It's a long Ramban, but we'll just take a look at a few lines over here. The Ramban says that Yosef remembers the dreams, the adash in this kaimu, and now he realizes that the dreams have been fulfilled because the brothers come and they bow down to him, right? That's the first thing they do. They bow down and then he recognizes them and he starts on his tirade. So Rashi says, he sees they bow down and he realizes that the dreams have been fulfilled. Right. However, lefi dati shahadavar behefech. So the Ramban says no, it's just the opposite. Ki omar akasuv ki beros Yosef es achav mishtachavim lo. When the Torah says that he sees them bowing, he remembers the dreams asher chalam lahem viadash lo niskayem, and now he realized that the dreams were not fulfilled or not fulfilled fully. Shelo niskayem. Shalonis kayem echad mehem b'fam hazos. One of them had not been fulfilled. Ki yodeya, for he knew. Ki kol echav yishtachavu lo batchila min hachalom harishon. V'hinei anachnu malumim alumim ki anachnu yirmoz l'chol echad asar. So the first of his two dreams indicated to him that all of his brothers were going to come and bow down to him. So the fact that they bowed down to him is not what Rashi says, according to the Ramban. Rashi's got it wrong. The dream has not been properly fulfilled. Upam shenis yishtachavu lo hashemesh v'hayareach. And from the second dream, we know that all the stars and the sun and the moon are going to bow down, which means that Yaakov also has to be there. So first dream is not fulfilled in its entirety because the brothers are missing one. Second dream is not fulfilled in its entirety because Yaakov isn't there. Chayvan shelo rab in yamin imahem chashav zos hatachabula shia alil aleihem. So he saw that the dreams were not fulfilled. He figured now is the opportunity to try to bring them to fruition. That's what Yitz is saying. Yitz channeling his inner Ramban. And he came up with this whole, with this whole stratagem to trick them and to get them down. So this way, the first dream would be fulfilled. The Alkane, and therefore, Loratza lahagid lahem ani Yosef achechem. Didn't want to say, I'm Yosef, your brother. Velomar maharu v'alu al aviv v'yishlacha galos, and tell them, go up to my father and bring down, and bring him down, which is what ultimately happens all the way at the end of the story. Kasher asapa pamashniya, ki haya aviv ba miyad, because his father would have come immediately, below safek, without any hesitation. V'achareshin iskayim achalom harishon, higid lahem l'kayim achalom hasheni. And then after the first dream is fulfilled, then he spilled the beans so that way they could fulfill the second dream, which includes the father. The lule kane haya Yosef chote chet gadol. And were this not Yosef's strategy, were this not Yosef's thought process, Yosef would have been such a sinner. How do you cause this type of pain and suffering? Litzaer es aviv. I mean, where is your kibud avaim? What's he doing, causing such terrible pain to his father? I'm taking you off of the screen for a second because I got to reset it. Okay, there we go. I just have trouble with this. All right, let's put you over here. When I share my screen, all the pictures of the people or view sort of go to this box, and then I have to move it around. Okay, so he's saying that. So the Ramban is saying, first of all, Rashi's approach can't be the case because the dreams were not fulfilled. And number two, the Ramban is anticipating your question, which is that if, like the Ramban is saying, that he was attempting, and like Yitz is saying, that he's attempting to bring the dreams to fruition, I mean, absent that, Yosef would be doing a tremendous sin, because he would be causing his father great pain. Lamido yomim rabim b'shikol ve'avel, to his father should be continuing mourning all of this time. Al Shimon, for Shimon that Yosef had taken, via love, and for Yosef himself. The af im hayaritzono litzaris echav, and even if he wanted to cause his brothers a little pain, echlo yichmol al shiva al sevas aviv, how could he not have some compassion on his elderly father? So because of that question, the Ramban says, Aval es hakol asa yafe beito lekayem hachalomos kidei sheyiskaymu be'emes. So the Ramban says Yosef did all this with the purest of intentions in order to bring the dreams to their full fruition. Gama inyan hasheni asa lahem. So that's what the Ramban says. Now, there's a problem with this Ramban, right? We have a statement and a rhetorical question. The statement is that they were acting honorably, that Yosef was acting honorably. And the rhetorical question is, because if not, how could he do this terrible avera of sinning against his father? So I want to flip it around. We have a question and a statement, or a statement and a question. It's not a rhetorical question. In other words, how could Yosef do this? To bring the dreams to fruition, that is a sufficient reason to cause his Maybe his brothers, maybe. But his father? His elderly father? By what right does he do that? What right? So you'll tell me it was a prophecy, and he was trying to bring the prophecy to fruition. Well, first of all, it's a dream. It's not a prophecy. So you'll tell me, okay, dreams are prophecies. Well, not exactly. We have dreams and we have dreams. Look at the other dreams in Bereishis. Yaakov has his dream. God speaks to him in the dream. Right? Avraham Avinu has a dream. There's the Bris Bein HaBesarim. God communicates. God is not communicating to Yosef in this dream. Yosef interprets the dream. Now, maybe the dream is there is some divine communication in a dream, but it's hard to classify that as a prophecy. And if it is some level of prophecy, it's certainly not like the God speaking to you and saying this is what has to happen. So it's certainly a lower level of prophecy. Not even like a chalom prophecy of Avraham Avinu and Yaakov Avinu. So the Ramban attempts to establish his position through this rhetorical question of if this were not the case, then this would be a terrible sin, and one can argue just the opposite. It's a terrible sin, and by what right did Yosef have to do this? Furthermore, even if you want to accept the Ramban's position, so how does that justify Yosef's later apparent cruelty to his brothers, where he sends them back with the goblet, and then he steals it, and how does it address that? Weren't the dreams fulfilled at that point? Were the dreams fulfilled at that point? They all bow down to him. They bow down to him in the name of their father. If Yaakov wasn't physically present, he certainly was represented in the bowing down. The Ramban says, "Avalas Hakol Asa Yafa." No, he acted with complete integrity. Nothing to see here. Ki yada. Even the thing that he did with the goblet, deleted here by accident, I guess. He didn't do it litza'aram. He didn't do it to cause them pain. Aval chashad, but he was concerned. Ulay yesh lahem sina b'vinyamin. Maybe, as a son of Rachel, they hated Binyamin. Sheikanu oso b'avas aviv, kikinasam bo. And that they were jealous of Binyamin, just like they were jealous of him all those years earlier. Oh, shemahir gish Binyamin shahaya yadam b'yosef v'nolda b'nehem ketata. Or maybe there was a real enmity between them, and there was the sinna and hatred. And he didn't want to send Binyamin off until he tested their resolve of how committed they were to their love to Binyamin. Vilazen is kavnu bar Rabboseinu, and this is what our rabbis meant when they said Amar Rabbi. Amar Rabbi Chia bar Abba, kol advarim shata kore shediber Yehuda b'fnei Echav, ad shata magia v'lo yachol Yosef lisapek, haya bo pius li Yosef, pius la Echav, pius li Binyamin. This whole story, from the beginning to the end, from the time that Yehuda speaks up, until the time that we have Yosef not being able to withhold his pain and suffering, and he cries out and he says, "I'm your brother." That whole thing is one large pius. It's one large reconciliation of some sort. Pius, reconciliation to Yosef, reconciliation with the brothers, and reconciliation with Binyamin. Okay, so I'm going to leave the Ramban here, but basically what the Ramban is suggesting is what Yitz said, which is that Yosef's whole approach here was to try to bring, he was acting with the highest and mightiest of principles, to bring the dreams to fruition. And as we said, that's problematic from a few perspectives, because the dream wasn't a real prophecy. This caused a lot of pain and suffering to the father. That's not really the mitzvah of kibudav, it's a sin. And furthermore, you know, the one thing which you can also say is that the dreams never really came to fruition. They never came to fruition. When did they ever come to fruition? First of all, Rachel never bows down to him. Rachel's dead. So if this were a dream that had to come to fruition, if this were a real prophecy in that sense, then it's never going to come true. So if part of it's no good, you know, what about the other? So that's another, you know, that's another problem. I'm not trying to pile in here on Yitz, you know. I'm just saying that it's problematic for all of these reasons. And by the way, even later on, when Yaakov apparently bows down, it's not clear if he's bowing down to Yosef, bowing down to God, right? But benkach u'benkach, the dreams never fully come to fruition. Okay, so with all of that, the notion of the Ramban, that he was either trying to bring it to fruition or testing his brother's regret, seemed to be somewhat problematic. It could be that it's revenge, but I would argue that it's not revenge, and I think that the psukim themselves would suggest that it's not revenge, because revenge, like revenge, would have an end game over here, and it seems like this is a strategy, this is a strategy that he's constantly working against. How often, it says three times that he withholds himself from, either he cries and he doesn't, and he doesn't give up his identity. That doesn't seem like a guy who's trying to conduct a, revenge. You know, a guy is trying to conduct his revenge, first of all, has to have like a certain mustache. Doesn't say he has anything like that mustache with the thing. But, you know, this doesn't seem to feel like a guy who's conducting revenge. It's like, it's a guy who's like trying to conduct revenge, you know. But it's not really, you know, not really doing it. It's not in his heart. It's not in his, you know, he's not really, he's pushing himself. So if that's the case, I think it's less likely that this is a payback, and more likely that, you know, there's some type of strategy here. Furthermore, I would say it's not revenge, because what's the trigger? What's the first pasuk that we read here, chapter 42? What does it say when he sees his brothers? Not the first pasuk, I'm sorry. What's the first pasuk that says when he sees his brothers? It says, Vayaker Yosef, he recognizes them. V'hem lo hikiruhu, they didn't recognize him. Vayizkor Yosef achalomos, he remembers the dreams, and then he goes off on a tirade against them. If this were a revenge story, shouldn't it say, and he remembered that they sold him and they threw him in a pit and tried to kill him and sold him to Egypt? That's the trigger. That's what he should be. That's what he should be taking revenge on. Instead, it says that he remembered the dreams, and now that he remembered the dreams, he goes off on this tirade, and this whole story happens. So, to me, although Steve, on one level, it does look like a revenge story, and you do have to sort of account for everything that he does, but given the fact that it's the dreams that trigger him, the remembering the dreams, and not the fact that they attempted to kill him, which triggers him. That's not what triggers him. It's the dreams. So I think that it's more like it's more likely that there's a strategy here rather than a revenge story. Okay, so if we've at least raised significant questions with it being a revenge story, one second, Steve, do you find anything that I've said compelling about it not being a revenge story? No, that's not compelling?
No, it is. It is. It's not a revenge story.
Okay. All right. So there is a third approach, an approach, and much of what I've told you just now is written up in an essay by Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun. So Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun suggests a third approach, which I'm just going to give you the capsule of it, because really I want to focus on the Haftarah where Chazal come down on this issue. So Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun argues that this is one huge mistake. It's like a big, big misunderstanding and a miscommunication, if you will. Yosef was sold when he went to his brothers in Dothan to check on them, and they see him, they capture him, they throw him in the pit. He ends up getting sold down to Egypt. Who told him to go to Dothan to begin with? Anybody?
Yaakov.
So Yosef was a student of history. Yosef saw that Avraham had two sons, a chosen son and a rejected son. He saw that Yitzchak had two sons, a chosen son and a rejected son. And he saw that Yaakov had a Reuven, who might be the Bechor, maybe even a Yehuda, who's the monarchy, but let's see, even just assume it's Reuven, who's the Bechor, and he's the Bechor of Leah. So who's the chosen one, and who's the rejected one? Because up until now, it's not chosen and not chosen, it's chosen and rejected. So Yosef looks at this, and he starts putting two and two together. He says, there's always a chosen one, there's always a rejected one. My father sent me to the brothers. So maybe Yosef thought that Yaakov wasn't in on it the whole time. Maybe this was the plot. And he was, and if it wasn't the plot, Yaakov himself was a man of great means and a man of influence. You know, this was a guy who could... Yaakov had a whole party that went to meet Esav. Esav had, hundreds of people of soldiers, and Yaakov was a man of resources, right? And he never came looking for Yosef, as far as Yosef knew. He went to the market and he didn't see a picture on the wall. Have you seen this person, like on the milk carton, right? He didn't see that. So from Yosef's perspective, this could have all been part of the plan. And so Yosef doesn't go to ever check out his father because he's assumed he's rejected. And he's come to live at peace with that. But then the brothers show up they say, he remembers the dreams, and they say to him, "No, we are all kulanu bnei ish echad. We are all men, children of one person. Bayomru shnei masar avadecha. We're twelve brothers. Hakatan avino hayom." The younger one is with our father, va'echad einenu, and the other one is gone missing. And then Yosef is like, he sort of has to confront his family now. and see, you know, is it really true? Did his father really reject him? Did his brothers ever come around? And so basically, and maybe, just maybe, the only person who can help him clarify the truth of the matter is the only one who he can really trust, which is Binyamin. The only one who he can really trust, which is Binyamin. So we have three possibilities here. One possibility is that it's a rejection story. It's a revenge story. And I think that you can at least poke holes in that possibility. Another possibility is that he was trying to bring the Nevuah to fruition. And you can poke holes in that as well, I think, as I attempted to do. Then Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun's suggestion that he thought Yosef, that Yaakov might have been in on it, you know, and only Binyamin could, you know, really say what was going on. So that's a possibility, and you know, maybe there are holes to be made in that or not. But I think that of these three, at least that seems to be one of the strongest, in my view, one of the strongest theories here. Now, I think that one can take issue with this, but I'm going to skip to the final part of the shiur, and that is, where did Chazal come down on this question? So I think that the answer can be found by a careful read of our Haftarah. If you read the Haftarah, so now let's turn to the Haftarah. The Haftarah of Parshas Miketz. And as we're reading through the Haftarah, I will remind you as I will say this Wednesday shiur, I want to acknowledge this Wednesday shiur is a consequence of the initiative of John Bradman. Because many years ago, John said, Rabbi, we should really you could do a class on the Haftarahs. So I started this class, I don't know, 5 years ago, and it started with just doing the Haftarahs. And then after I went through one or two cycles of the Haftarah, and I just made it into a weekly Parsha Shir. But this Wednesday Shir is a consequence of John Bradman's initiative. So I want to acknowledge that. All right. Okay, so let's turn to the Haftarah. And let's see how the Haftarah, why did I say that? Because when we did the Haftarah series, I mentioned many times, and I'll say it again now, that in my theory of the Haftarahs is that the Haftarahs are here for one main spiritual reason. And that is the reason that they were established to begin with was because the Jews were at some point in a state of persecution, whether this was during the Roman period or whenever it was, not really so important, or maybe it is important, but it was a time of persecution. And at this time of persecution, the Jews were banned from public Torah study. So they couldn't read the parsha. They couldn't do public readings of the parsha. So it was the rabbis instituted the haftaras in order that by reading the haftarah, the haftarah would somehow jog our mind. It would be a story close enough to the parsha that it would sort of like remind us of the parsha. But it's not just that. That's not in dispute. That's not a theory. That's the accepted wisdom of how this was established. But what I'm suggesting, it wasn't just made to remind us of the parsha, but every haftarah comes with a message of how to bring about redemption, how to bring about geula, how to get out of the time of persecution and suffering characterized of galus characterized by persecution and suffering. So with that background, let's take a look at the Haftarah of Parshas Miketz, which apparently is not read so often because I don't know how often, but a lot of times you get Shabbos Chanukah is Miketz. So if Shabbos Chanukah is Miketz, then you don't read this. You don't read this Haftarah. One of our Balei Kriya in Shul told me the last week, he said he hopes that the Gabbaim will be gracious enough to give him maftir. He says, because, you know, how often does he get to read the Haftarah of Miketz? Because if it's Shabbos Chanukah, then you read a different, Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Chanukah, then you read a different Haftarah. Okay, so let's take a look at the Haftarah, and we'll see how this is a genius pick by the Chachamim for the Parsha of Miketz. Vayikat Shlomo v'hine chalom. This is a story in Sefer Melachim, Kings, chapter 3. Shlomo awakens from a dream. Anybody remember the dream that Shlomo awakened from? This is the dream in which God gives him an opportunity, you know, to ask for anything, you know, ask for wealth, ask for fame, ask for power, and Shlomo asks for wisdom, right? You remember the story? And since God is so taken or moved by the fact of this honorable request, that he not only does he bless Solomon with wisdom, but Shlomo HaMelech is also blessed with these other material blessings as well. So Vayikach Shlomo v'hine chalom, Shlomo awakens, and there's a dream. Now, this is a perfect tie-in to our Parsha, because this is the Parsha where Paro awakens from a dream, and he needs somebody to interpret it. Vayavo Yerushalayim, and Shlomo comes up in Yerushalayim, Vayamod lefnei Aron Bris Adonai, Vayalo Los Vayashlomim Vayas Mishtel Chol Avadav. So you have Shlomo awakening from a dream, and there is a great feast that occurs. Now you have Yosef, who had to interpret Paro's dreams, and we also have a great feast that occurs, not exactly tied to the dream per se, but we do have a big party for Paro's birthday, right? It's the Yom Huledet of Paro. So we have that connection. Az tavona shtayim nashim zonos al ha-melech. Now you have these two zonos. How do we, harlots? Is that, right? Two zonos, two harlots or two innkeepers. I'll let you figure out which one is the better interpretation. Zon from the word zona, or zon from the word lazun, to offer sustenance. But hamod lefanav, and the two women stand before him. Vatomar isha achaz biadoni ani, vaisha hazos yashvos bevayis echad. Ve'eleid ima bevayis. He says, listen, we have a problem here. I and this woman, we were both dwelling in one house, and we both gave birth. Vahi bayom ha-shlishi l'viti, on the third day of the birth, Taylor Gama Isha Hazos, I gave birth, she gave birth, and now Anachlu Yachtav Ein Zaritano Babayit, we're alone in the house, just us, the house, and the kids. I gave birth, she gave birth. Layamat Ben Aisha Hazos Laila Sher Shachva Alav, and the other woman's son dies. She had been lying on him. Vatakam Besoch Laila Vatikach Es Bnei Me'etzliva Mascha Yishena. So the other woman switched with me. She took my kid, and hers had died, mine's alive. They switched. She switched. And I got up in the morning to suckle the child, to nurse the child. And the child was died. The child died. When I studied the matter, in the morning, I realized it wasn't my child. So the woman says, "It's mine is the live one, hers is the dead one." No, mine is the live one, hers is the dead one. So here we have Shlomo HaMelech forced in a position to see two totally diametrically opposing situations and somehow come to a understanding of what is correct. And isn't that what Yosef had to do? Yosef was challenged with a dream that gave two entirely opposing views, seven fat cows and seven skinny cows, right? Is this a dream of plenty, or is this a dream of suffering? How do you reconcile these totally opposing things? Now, Similarly, Shlomo HaMelech comes off of this great, amazing, situation. Namely, God had given him the blessing of wisdom and material goods. And he is now thrust into this crisis. It's a crisis. Similarly, Yosef is on the top of his game. He is, he is Paro's number two guy. Once he interprets the dreams, and he's also thrust into this crisis. He's thrust into this crisis of dealing with his brothers. He's also, you can also say it another way. He's coming off of this amazing position which he had as the chief warden in jail. Now, maybe it's not great to be, a frog in the biggest frog in that pond, but the fact of the matter is, he was the head of the heap over there, and the warden was treating him well. He was basically running the show. His freedom was suspended, but from all accounts of the Torah, it seems like I don't want to minimize the fact that a person's in prison, but he was running the show. He had all the power in that. So he was coming off of a pretty good situation, relatively speaking. And now having to interpret Paro's dreams, if you get that wrong, if the despot doesn't like what you said, could very well be off with your head. So this isn't a shoo-in, unless you have tremendous emunah and bitachon, as Yosef apparently did. I'm just saying that we have here a parallel of Shlomo coming off of this great moment, this dream, God blessing him with everything, and now he's thrust into this crisis, Yosef as well. So now, how is he going to, either Yosef having to, the crisis being how he's going to interpret the dreams, or the crisis being how he's going to deal with his brothers who are now confronting him and forcing him to confront them after all these years. Vayomer HaMelech, the king says, Kchuli Charev, I'm going to take a sword. Bring me a sword. Vayaviu Acharev Lefnei HaMelech, they bring him the sword, and he says, cut the child in half. Half to this one, and half to that one. And of course, Vatomer Ishal Asher Bina Achai Al HaMelech, the woman who was her son, says to the king, let the child live and let it be with the other woman. Okay. And Shlomo sees that her compassion for the child, and he says, this is the true mother. Before we go, I have to open up a brackets. Does everybody know the famous joke on this story of Solomon's wisdom? I have to say it. So the joke goes as follows. There's a suitor coming to town in some shtetl, and he's coming to propose to one of the women in town, one of the young maidens. So two mothers show up at the train to greet the suitor, and he gets off the train. And the one mother says, this is the one for my daughter. And the other one says, no, it's the one for my daughter. So, okay, we'll go to the rabbi of the town. So the rabbi says, we'll cut the chassan in half. We'll cut him in half. So one woman says, cut him in half. And the other woman says, no, let the boy live. Give it to the other kid. So the rabbi looks at the woman who says, cut him in half, and says, belongs to her daughter, because this is the true Jewish mother-in-law. Right. Like, I can only say that because it's so far removed from my own mother-in-law experience that it's not even, it took me a while to get the joke. That's how. Okay, so, all right, but close parentheses, back to the story here. So he sees that she had such compassion. This is the woman who must be the mother of the child, and of course, the story continues a couple more psukim. But here again, you have a perfect parallel to our parsha. right? Was this a revenge story or something else? So in our story, you can either say that Yosef was trying to take revenge, or you can make the argument that this was a strategy in order to ferret out the truth about a matter. Just like, and he used a very harsh tool, which is threatening them with believing that they're going to die. Just like Shlomo, in his strategy, he made them believe that he was actually going to kill the kid. Obviously, he wasn't going to kill the kid. I don't think there's any expectation from the reader reading the story that Shlomo meant to cut the kid in half. And I think that what Chazal are doing by assigning this story to our parsha is saying, you could, Steve, read this as a revenge story. But it's not. Yosef was doing in the parsha what Shlomo was doing in the Haftarah. That is, using a very harsh methodology, tough love, if you will, in order to ferret out the truth about a situation. In the case of Shlomo, it was to ferret out whether this was the mother or that was the mother. In the case of Yosef, it was to ferret out the truth about whether the brothers had indeed changed. If they had learned the value of compassion for a brother. It's not just about testing whether they were going to be nice to Binyamin, right? It's had they learned this value of compassion for one brother for another. And through this very harsh tool of making them believe first that Shimon was going to be in prison, and that Binyamin was going to be in prison, and maybe Binyamin should even be killed for stealing the goblet of the king. Through that tool, he determined that indeed they did learn the midah of compassion. After all, Yehuda steps up and says and argues on Binyamin's behalf, and he's doing so really, you know, representing the brothers. So what Yosef learns about his brothers is that indeed they learn this midah of compassion. And I want to prove it to you that this theory is rooted in the pasuk. Take a look at in the Haftarah, pasuk 26. Vatomer ha'isha asher benaha chayel ha'melech. The woman whose son was the live son, says to the king, "Let the boy live, ki nichmeru rachameha al bina, because her compassion was she was overcome by compassion for her child." That language, ki nichmeru rachameha, is not a phrase that comes up that often in the Chumash. But guess where it comes up in the Chumash? Take a look at Yosef. And I didn't write down the pasuk, so it's going to take me a second to find it. If you find it first, please let me know. Let's go back to the Parsha, where Yosef says, where Yosef has compassion for his brothers. Okay. If I don't find it in a second, you'll... here, I found it. 43:30. End of Miketz. Vayisayana vayaras Binyamin achiv. They bring down Binyamin, and Yosef sees his brother. Vayomer, and he says, Hazeh achichem hakaton. Is this boy, the youngest, the baby of the family that you told me about? Vayomar Elokim Yachnecha Bini, Vayemaher Yosef, and Yosef runs out of the room. Ki nichmeru rachamav, the same exact words. The mother of the child by Shlomo HaMelech, ki nichmeru rachamav, because her compassion had overcome her. And now Yosef is ki nichmeru, Vayemaher Yosef, that Yosef runs out of the room because his compassion for his brother had been stirred. He was overcome, and he wanted to weep. But I would say that there's another way to read this pasuk. He ran out of the room. Ki nichmeru rachamav el achiv. Well, maybe it is not. Okay, just leave it at that. But there's a connection here. We see the same language. The same language. Okay, I'll say it. I don't know if this is true or not. But ki nichmeru rachamav el achiv. He ran out of because he saw the compassion that the brothers had for Binyamin. I don't know if that's pshat. But when it says that he ran out because he wanted to cry not because of his own feelings of compassion for his brother, but he saw the compassion that his brothers had for had for him. Now I don't know if that's right or not. But we're running out of time, so we can leave that. But at the very least, the connection of nichmeru rachamav in the haftarah, ki nichmeru rachamav in the parsha, tells us that the key here is what are the rabbis trying to tell us? The rabbis are saying that when you read this haftarah, because you people in exile, you don't have access to the parsha, so we're giving you a story that's going to remind you about salient points about the parsha, and the salient point we want you to remember about to learn about the parsha. Is that Yosef was engaged in a strategy, not in revenge, and it was to figure out if brothers had learned compassion for one another. And indeed, Yosef learns that they did have compassion for one another. And by doing so, he then reveals himself. And he reveals himself and he says, Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai. And let's take a look at the concluding line here in the Haftarah. Vayan HaMelech, and the king says, give the child to this woman. That's the mother. Vayishmu kol Yisrael es ha-mishpat asher shafat HaMelech. All of Israel saw the judgment that Solomon had meted out. Vayir'u mipnei HaMelech. And they had awe and fear of the king. This reminds us of the brothers. It's actually next week's parsha when he reveals himself, and they are afraid of Yosef. They're afraid of Yosef. Ki ra'u ki chachmas Elohim bekirbo la'asos mishpat. Right? They saw the women and all of Israel saw that Solomon had this great wisdom. Vayhi amel Shlomo melech al kol Yisrael. And Shlomo became king of all of Israel. And isn't that what happens with Yosef? Yosef becomes ruler of all his brothers. Okay, so in this story of the Navi of King Solomon, we have a genius pick by the Chachamim for the Haftarah for Miketz. Because in so many ways it reminds us of Miketz, and it answers for us the question, where did Chazal come down on this question? Was this a revenge story? Or was this a dream come true? And I don't mean the dream of, well, maybe I do. By a chaloma chalomos, he remembers the dream. He remembers the dream that he had all those years ago, that he was going to rule over his brothers. The dream was he was going to rule over his brothers and provide them food, right? They're collecting sheaves. And their sheaves are going to be dependent on him. In his dream, it wasn't about lording over the brothers, but it was about him being with the brothers and being ruler over them. And that's indeed what happens. He protects them. He takes care of them. He takes care of his father. They all are dependent on him. Bowing is not necessarily a sign of subservience in the sense of keeping a person down. It could be, but bowing is also a sense of subservient in the sense that you are providing for me and I am dependent on you. Vayihi HaMelech Shlomo Melech Al Kol Yisrael. Shlomo, through this wisdom, through this act, through this strategy, became king of all of Israel. And through Yosef's strategy here, he learns about his brothers, and he becomes king of all of his brothers, ruler over all of his brothers. And maybe Yitz and the Ramban are right. Maybe through this strategy, he realizes the dream. He lets the dream come to fruition. But that can't be his primary goal. Because if that's his primary goal, it's a big cruelty to his father. So, to conclude here, I think that what we see here is Chazal not just giving us a genius way of connecting the Haftarah to the Parsha, but it's also, as I said, they're always giving a Musar, they're always giving a message of how to get out of Gullus, of exile. You want to get out of Gullus? I'm telling you the way to do it. The way to do it is through showing compassion to one another, is through showing Ahava, through showing Achdus, unity of the family. Through that is the way to get from Gullus to Geula, from exile to redemption. Wasn't an easy thing that Yosef did. It was tough love. In doing so, he either spurned compassion for the brothers, or he ferreted out that they had already learned that lesson. And sometimes these things can't just be done through, just asking a question and answering it. It has to go through a process of an experience. And that's what Yosef provided for them. So I think this is a good parsha and a haftarah to read around Chanukah time, because Chanukah time is, of course, the ideological battle between Judaism and paganism, but it's also about the end of a civil war, a war of brothers, right? The Hellenist Jews versus the rabbinic Jews, the traditional Jews, and this was a terrible war. And Chanukah represents the end of that war and the reunification of Klal Yisrael, of the Jewish people. And that explains why the mitzvah of lighting the candle of Chanukah is a mitzvah which is in many ways on the household. Yes, everybody lights their own, but the essential mitzvah is called Ner Ish Ubeso, one candle for the whole household. Because it's about demonstrating a unity of the family, of the nuclear family, and doing so symbolically for the family of Klal Yisrael. So, to our question, why did Yosef not see his father for so many years? I think Rav Yoel Ben Nun's answer is compelling. He might have thought that Yaakov was in on it. Why did he exhibit such cruelty to his brothers? Well, I don't think it was cruelty and revenge, but it was a strategy in order to ferret out whether they had learned the midah of compassion and to engender the midah of compassion within the brothers such that the family could move on from quote-unquote exile to a redemptive experience. And that's it. Comments or questions? Paula, you had something you wanted to say?
No.
Okay.
No. I do.
Yes, go ahead, Yitz.
What about the fact that it's a very compelling aspect that the brothers initially had jealousy of Yosef? That didn't exhibit with Binyamin. So there should have been a doubt in the mind of Yosef that the brothers would have shown compassion for Binyamin, because there was no jealousy factor there.